Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Some big picks by Donald Trump today. Some big announcements, including his border czar, who's actually going to be a border czar. Unlike the last person who was a fraud, Kamala Harris, this border czar is actually going to get it done. I'm talking about Tom Holman, the man himself. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It's Monday. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Hope you had a great weekend, and it's going to be a fun week for us. Wednesday night, of course, our speaker series with my buddy Jimmy Fallon, and that's going to be at the Media Theater, Media PA. Get your tickets today by going to 1210wphg.com. There's not a lot of tickets left, so do it today. And the other big announcement is Trump picked Elise Stefanik, friend of the show, big friend of the show. She was on a lot during the campaign. She will be the ambassador to the United Nations, UN ambassador. It's a great pick. It was a seat formerly held by Nikki Haley. What I love is Trump proactively fired Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo by tweeting out over the weekend that they would not be serving in his administration. I thought that was hysterical. I really did. It was so funny that he did that. It's just classic Trump. What can you say? I mean, it's classic Trump. So there we go. All right. 855-839-1210 if you want to weigh in today on everything we are discussing on the show. The other point, too, that I wanted to make is that his deputy chief of staff, Stephen Miller, a longtime Trump confidant, also a guy who's very tough on the border and a guy that the left hates. They hate him so much. He's a nice guy, though. But that's it. Now, the other question is Secretary of State. Who's it going to be? Rick Grenell, Marco Rubio, Bill Hagerty. Nobody really knows. But one thing I've noticed is that Corey Lewandowski has been tweeting out, asking people. He's like, hey, MAGA, who would you rather see for this position? And then he would tweet it out and people would respond to it. I thought that was an interesting thing that the Trump campaign is doing, or that I should say the president-elect is doing, actually asking people who support him their opinion. I think that's a very effective move by the president-elect and his administration. So, you know, MAGA weigh in and he'll give three choices. Who do you like for attorney general? And he'll give three choices. And, you know, you can weigh in there. Mike Lee, Matt Whitaker, somebody else. And that's been effective and people have been responding to it. So that's where we go. And the numbers continue. I mean, he's just crushing it. I was on Jimmy's show Saturday night on Fox News Saturday night. If you tuned in, thank you. If not, please go back and take a watch. But well, we got the breaking news that Trump had officially won Arizona. So he swept all of the battleground states, 100% of them. And the numbers that are coming out right now, the numbers show his decisive and crushing victory, and it's unbelievable. It really is. It's unbelievable the extent to which Donald Trump just absolutely crushed it on Election Day. He made gains in every demographic, every single demographic. I mean, huge gains with women, with Latinos, with black voters. I mean, just all across the board, he made gains in every single area. He made gains in every lefty state, California. He made gains in New Jersey, New York, by significant, like 11 points. I mean, significant stuff here. It wasn't even close. It was a crushing, commanding mandate, bottom line, for Donald Trump. And I'm happy about it. I really am. I'm happy that it was so decisive because the liberal tears taste more delicious, I guess you can say right now, knowing that it was so definitive and decisive. But some of the videos that are being put out there, and let me just go on the record and say, Justine Bateman is a national treasure. Justine Bateman, who is Mallory on Family Ties, my childhood crush. What she has been doing now is crushing snowflakes, who put out these hysterical, over-the-top reaction videos. And then she proceeds to mock them. By the way, we're streaming live on YouTube. Join the fun at 1210 WPHT on our YouTube page. And join the chat and say hello to your friends and et cetera. She proceeds to mock them. But by almost a serious mock, it's satire by going on about the pros and cons of the little video that they put out, but treating every single one like it's staged. Because that's what they all are, sage. All this outrage is feigned outrage by mostly white liberals, feigning outrage, pretending like the world is falling on them, pretending like it's all over, it's doom and gloom, and it's absolutely hysterical, over the top. And she's made an observation about the Democrat Party, that the Democrat Party was hijacked in 2020 by woke. I would actually say it was a lot earlier than that, but that's okay. That's her opinion, 2020. And that now the woke movement needs to die the death of the Federalists and the Whigs and go away. And this is very similar to what other people have been saying. There is a gigantic blame game going on in the Democrat Party right now, just so you know. You have the Obama people blaming the Biden people. The Biden people are blaming Kamala Harris and the Obama people. And the Obama people are blaming Pelosi. And it's a back and forth circular firing squad. The Pod Bros, the Pod Save America Bros, were all saying Biden never should have run. He probably shouldn't have run, but weren't these people all complicit in hiding Biden's cognitive decline from all of us for all these years? The answer is yes, they were. And weren't these the same people that covered up in 2020 for the Hunter Biden laptop? Yes, they were. Absolutely. So they knew that not only was he, did he have dementia, they knew he was corrupt with dementia. But Justine Bateman's point about woke and how we have been walking on eggshells all these years, afraid to talk to each other, afraid to say our opinion, people feeling silenced. A blanket of oppression, of censorship on top of all of us. And it's over now. It has to be over. And she's getting killed by the left, but good for her. Now, her brother, on the other hand, the lesser Bateman, Jason Bateman, actually sold his Tesla because he felt like the Tesla was a gigantic bumper sticker for Donald Trump ever since Elon Musk came out and endorsed Donald Trump. So you can see the difference between these two celebrities. And I actually think there's a moment here for Hollywood where if they wanted to, they could capitalize on the 75, 80 million people that voted for Donald Trump and don't want woke anymore, don't want to be lectured anymore, don't want to be talked down to and belittled. And there's a marketplace for them. The Daily Wire has been smart about this. They've been making movies. And I mean, the people behind The Sound of Silence, the Reagan movie. There is a marketplace for this stuff, no doubt about it. Dinesh D'Souza putting out his movies. We'll see if Hollywood gets the lesson or if they decide that they're going to just continue to make horrible movies like the new Joker movie, which is so bad that even an actor on the movie said on Joe Rogan's podcast, this is the worst movie he's ever seen, and you can't even hate watch it. It's that terrible. I'll talk more about that later as the show goes on. But the big story of the day brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. It is Veterans Day. I want to thank each and every one of our veterans for your service to our country. Thank you so much, and God bless you. Dr. Mike held his big veterans breakfast on Saturday, and many people came out to salute our veterans, and thank you if you're one of them. And thanks to everyone who served our country on this very important Veterans Day. We'll talk to my buddy, Ryan Mannion, a little bit later in the show. She, of course, runs the Travis Mannion Foundation, named after her brother. But the big story is that Tom Holman is now going to be the border czar. And he's a badass. He doesn't mess around. He was a Border Patrol agent back in the day. And he rose through the ranks. And he's been an outspoken critic of the current administration and an outspoken supporter of Donald Trump and Donald Trump's policies. And he's going all in on the deportation. Let's remember something. Barack Obama deported 3 million Americans. So the left is about to fake outrage over this. That'll be the next thing they fake outrage over, about how inhumane and cruel it is to deport people. I just want to remind you, Barack Obama deported over 3 million people. Okay? He was also the guy that put kids in cages, for the record. But they blame Trump on that as well. But let me play you a little bit of Tom Holman from this morning. He vowed to launch America's biggest deportation operation. This is a flashback video when he was the acting director of ICE, and he destroyed Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of the people who is the symbol of the woke movement, no question about it. And Holman was not holding back in this clip here, cut number three.
Mr. Holman, your name is on this. Is this correct?
Yes, I signed that memo.
So you are the author of the family separation policy?
I am not the author of this memo.
You're not the author, but you signed the memo.
Yes, a zero tolerance memo.
So you provided the official recommendation to Secretary Nielsen on family for the United States to pursue family separation.
I gave Secretary Nielsen numerous recommendations on how to secure the border and save lives.
But it says here that you gave her numerous options, but the recommendation was option three, family separation.
What I'm saying, this is not the only paper where we've given the Secretary numerous options to secure the border and save lives.
And so the recommendation, of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommended zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
The same as is whenever a U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their...
If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that father from his family.
Mr. Holman, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
Good for him, by the way. And that's the truth. If you get arrested, you are separated from your children. That's how that works. And that has been, that's the policy. You don't spend the night in jail with your kids. But they can't grasp this. They really cannot grasp this. And I want to thank Pamela Poppins at Artist Pam. She's the one who sent me the Justine Bateman stuff over the weekend. And I'm obsessed with it. I keep reading. A little bit later in the show, I'm going to read you some of her tweets to show you what I mean by what she's doing. I'll play you some of the outrage hysteria videos from the left and then her critiques, and they're hysterical. It's master epic class trolling. But what it does is show you how all the outrage is manufactured. People crying into the camera. It's totally fake. It's all fugazis. And she's just calling these people out and doing so as a filmmaker, pointing out how bad these videos really are. Tom Holman went on Fox News this morning on Fox and Friends talking about the ineffectiveness of sanctuary cities. He also said he's going forward with the deportation policy. He said, I don't care if people hate me. It doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway. That's what's going to get done. And that's what Trump needs. He needs somebody who's actually going to get done, who understands the crisis at the border, who's not messing around here, and is effective. And Tom Holman is all of those things. Cut 19.
Well, I think, look, it'd be great to have local law enforcement assist ICE because, you know, one thing we learned during 9/11 report was we shouldn't have stovepipes. Law enforcement should work on law enforcement. But, you know, there's two things. Number one, under President Trump, he was suing the sanctuary cities, DOJ suing the sanctuary cities, pulling federal funds. Of course, day one, when Joe Biden came in office, he stopped that lawsuit. So that has to be put back in place. And look, I've seen some of these Democratic governors say they're going to stand in the way. They're going to make it hard for us. Well, I you know, a suggestion. If you're not going to help us, get the hell out of the way if we're going to do it. So if we can't get assistance from New York City, and I may have, you know, we may have to double the number of agents we send to New York City because we're going to do the job. We're going to do the job without you or with you. But it's much easier to arrest a bad guy. Like I just said, we're concentrating on public safety, threats of human and national security threat. It's much easier to arrest a bad guy in the jail. Give us access to Rikers Island that we've been kicked out of. Let us get the bad guy in the jail. It's safer for the alien. It's safer for the officer. It's safer for the community. But so if you don't release these bad guys, out in the community, then we're going to have to go find them, which puts the officer at risk, puts the community at risk, and puts, you know, and bottom line is, it's no one, sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals. And the left keeps saying, well, we want victims and witnesses of a crime to feel safe, come to the police department, knowing we don't work for life. Let me make one thing clear. That's just a stone cold lie. Victims and witnesses of a crime does not want the bad guy back in their neighborhood.
That's true.
And certainly. And most illegal immigrant community, they broke the law being there. They shouldn't be. However, after being there, they're God-fearing family people.
Let me just stop it right there. Really, just jump in here. Let me jump in. All right. So, two things. I'm being told that the YouTube stream has low volume. We can fix that. That'd be great. Number two, let's think about sanctuary cities and what they are. All right, because when they first came out, like when Jim Kenney came out and did the fat man's white overbite, dancing in the hallway to "We Are a Sanctuary City," yeah, and then high-fiving his chief of staff and almost missing. Sanctuary cities were about protecting criminals. All right, they were not about giving sanctuary. Again, in the old days, you could claim sanctuary in church. You know, you'd run into a church and they'd lock the doors and you'd see all the people outside with the torches. And that it was not about protecting mothers and children. And, you know, we're a sanctuary city. We're not going to let moms and their little kids be deported. It was literally about protecting criminals who were in the jail. The only way ICE knew about them is because they were in the system. So, for example, a person would commit a crime. And then ICE would get flagged and say, this person is wanted. They have a deportation order on them or an ICE hold order on them, whatever it is. And under the sanctuary city policies of people like Jim Kenney and other Democrat mayors around the country, they would not hand over a criminal to ICE. And I don't think that really was something that people understood back then, because sanctuary sounds like such a wonderful term. It sounds so caring and helping. But ask yourself this question. To the residents of Philadelphia who pay their taxes, to the citizens who live in the city, be they black, white, Latino, whatever, straight, gay, whatever, is it fair to them to turn criminals back on the streets, criminals who could be deported and sent out of our country? Is it fair to the people that live there and pay taxes who are U.S. citizens to turn these criminals back on the streets? The answer is no. But they made it sound like the sanctuary cities were there to stop Trump's awful, inhumane family separation, just going randomly house to house and picking people up and throwing them out of the country. And that's not ever what it was. And that's Holman's point. Give us access to the bad guys. Let's start with the criminals. They're in the system. They're in the jails. Let us go get them. And instead of the taxpayers having to feed these people and house these people, get them out of here. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It really does. Why are we paying to incarcerate people who are in this country illegally? Makes absolutely no sense. We got enough things to pay for. We don't need to pay for that, too. And that's where he's going to start. He's saying, you know, give us access to Rikers Island. Give us access to these jails. Just an update on Pennsylvania. Dave McCormick, the race has been called. Bob Casey, the lesser Casey, is still refusing to concede. Chuck Schumer is saying that until Casey concedes, he is not going to let Dave McCormick into the Senate, as in as a freshman for orientation on Wednesday. Now, McCormick is saying he's going anyway, and Republicans are vowing to escort him into the Senate if necessary. But I'll tell you something else about this, too. I think that Schumer is colluding with Mitch McConnell on this to try to keep Dave McCormick out, because McConnell was hoping that his allies will become the new Senate Majority Leader and not Rick Scott, who's got the backing of MAGA World. They're hoping it's going to be either Thune or Cornyn, and they're worried that McCormick is going to go in there and vote for Rick Scott because he wants to make President Trump happy. And that's why I think Schumer and McConnell are actually colluding to keep Dave McCormick out. Well, McCormick said, the hell with it, I'm going in. And all these Republican senators have now vowed to escort him, if necessary, into the U.S. Capitol, into the Senate building. So good for him. And the lesser Casey not conceding, this is all about fundraising. It's all about raising money. You know, help us with the recount. And it proves to you something else about Democrats, which is their election denialism and all their shrieks and their cries and their pearl clutching about Trump being an election denier and blah, 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 blah. It's all BS. It's all a fugazi. It's not real. Stacey Abrams, Beto O'Rourke, Lesser Casey, they're all election deniers. Democrats and Republicans both do this when they think that there's a shot in hell that they can either A, win, or B, raise money off of a recount. They'll do it. But they have spent so many years crying about how Trump was an election denier and was all fake. The latest thing that's happening in Washington is Biden is being urged to resign to make Kamala Harris president of the United States so that they can finally have a woman president. And also to mess up all of Donald Trump's merchandise. All the 47s won't mean anything anymore for MAGA. It'll be for Kamala Harris, and he'll have to make up 48s. I don't know if Biden's going to do it. I don't think he will. I don't think he... why would he? He hates her, and there's absolutely no reason for him to do so. The happiest I've seen Joe Biden is when Joe Biden came out the other day and said he's welcoming Donald Trump to the White House on Wednesday to start the transition process. He seemed happy. He seemed refreshed. He seemed loving and caring. And Joe Biden wearing her red MAGA outfit to go vote. Dr. Joe Biden, you always have to say that by law on election day. Biden's not going anywhere. He's not going to turn over the keys to the mansion to her. No way. He hates her. He always has. And she was complicit in part of the coup against Joe Biden to get him out of the race. Now, look, whether or not Joe Biden would have won this election or not, whether or not Joe Biden should have ever run again for re-election, whether the Pod Save America bros are all upset by this or not, it doesn't change the simple fact. And here's what the simple fact is. All of these people covered up Joe Biden's cognitive decline. All of them. They're all complicit in covering up Joe Biden. They're all complicit in telling us that Joe Biden was perfectly fine and that it was fake news to suggest that Biden had dementia. And it was only when Joe Biden's poll numbers were so bad that they staged that debate in June to show America what they all knew about Joe Biden. And that's when George Clooney wrote his op-ed in the New York Times, and then the coup happened and they got him out of the race. But for all these people now that are blaming Biden himself for running for re-election, they designed the primary in a way that Joe Biden would not have to face the primary. They went out there and they made sure that people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could not compete. That congressman who was running against Biden, who never really had a shot, but they made sure that the deck was stacked against him. The Democrat primary was completely closed. Nobody had a chance. Biden didn't really campaign. It was a fake primary. They orchestrated all of it and they controlled the process, and that was the end of it. And then when they decided to get Joe Biden out, they had their hand picked. They didn't have a convention process. They just said it's Kamala Harris and everybody fall in line. And the Democrats didn't want to fall in line. They killed their own movement. They suffocated their own movement with Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is speaking out about the Democrat Party and who they really are. In fact, I have a clip to play for you of Bernie Sanders. And this is Bernie talking about where the Democrats are right now. And oh, and by the way, there's a great clip of Bob Brady, the congressman from Philadelphia, former congressman, the chairman of the Democrat Party, powerful guy. Guy runs Philadelphia politics. Never even got a phone call from Kamala Harris. Never got anything from the campaign. Nothing. Completely ignored by the Harris campaign. Guy's been running the party since the 80s. And like him or not, he's a very powerful guy and he gets things done. They never even reached out to him. But here's Bernie Sanders blasting the Democrats for their attitude towards, among all people, Joe Rogan. Cut number 7.
Joe Rogan, very popular podcaster. He endorsed Donald Trump in the final days of the election. 4 years ago, you went on his podcast. You got a lot of blowback for doing that and for touting that he endorsed you. So is this the kind of example of Democrats perhaps shunning or vilifying people who don't totally agree with them?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Look, you can have an argument with Rogan, agree with him, disagree with him, but what's the problem going on in those shows? It's hard for me to understand that. So I think we've got to get, and clearly you have an alternative media out there, a lot of podcasts that have millions and millions of viewers. Get on the show. Disagree with you here. I agree with you there. I don't see a problem in doing that. And you're right. I got vilified by some of the Democratic establishment because I went on Rogan's show. Now a lot of other people are doing just that.
Let's also think about something here for a moment of what Bernie's saying. All right. He's talking about the alternative podcasts. And there's a lot of them out there. That Theo guy. There's a whole bunch. And they reach different people. Andrew Schultz. They're not necessarily conservative. A lot of them lean very libertarian. But they're reaching a new audience of people who may not tune into talk radio or may not tune into the corporate media, for example. And Trump was very smart to go on those shows and reach those people, probably driven by his son, Barron, because his son, Barron, probably listens to a lot of those podcasts. And he was right to tap into that cultural moment. And that's where we are. It's a cultural moment. You know, I said the other day that Trump is punk rock. And what I meant by that was he's punk rock with the youth. They still think of him as the rebel. But now he's filling arenas. I mean, he's obviously massive in terms of the electoral results that he's achieved. It's really stunning. But in terms of the kids, the young people, he's still the anti-establishment. To win the youth vote in the way that he's done, to do so good with the young voters proves that point. He is the anti-establishment. And they love that about him. And a lot of these podcasts that he went on are also anti-establishment. All right, 855-839-1210. We're going to talk to Philly's own John Yoo about all things going on with regards to the investigations and the cases against Donald Trump and why they should all go away now that he is President-elect Donald Trump. That's coming up for you straight ahead. Don't forget, get your tickets to see me and Jimmy Failla together Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. in Media PA. Just go to 1210WPHC.com and do it today. 1210WPHC.com. You don't want to miss this. It's going to be a great show, okay? 1210WPHC.com. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is his walk-up music. He's requested this, and I'll make sure and play it every time he joins us. He's a big deal. He is the Emmanuel S. Heller Professor of Law at the University of California at Berkeley, a non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and a visiting fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. He's Philadelphia's own John Yoo. And the crowd goes wild. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you, Rich?
I'm doing well. By the way, there's some breaking news. Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, has appointed former Congressman and New York Governor candidate Lee Zeldin to be the administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency that just came out a short time ago. So lots of appointments. He's getting right to work.
Wow, that's big news, although I feel bad for him. That's a tough job.
That is a tough job, yes. But that's an agency that definitely needs to be reined in, right? I mean, that's an agency that's gone. I mean, when we think about executive overreach and making up laws and under the guise of promulgating rules, I mean, the EPA is target number one.
They're one of the worst. I mean, they basically think they have the right to regulate everybody's backyard, and they've tried, and they've lost in the Supreme Court several times recently trying to do that. They also think they have the right to tell everybody where they get their electricity from, what they get the energy from, and how to use it. So, yeah, that's an agency that's ripe for some common sense, you know, common sense thinking once in a while. So it's been I think that's a great change. I don't know much about Lee Zeldin otherwise, other than he ran a great race against Hochul last time around, and maybe he'll do really well in the EPA job.
But yeah, he's been on the show.
Who gives a crap about things that go on in New York, right? I mean, come on, they're all screwed up anyway.
Well, good for. I mean, it's great, but you know, you mentioned they wanted to regulate your backyard, and that was the WOTUS Act, right? The Waters of the United States Act, where they said that if you've got any water in your bed, it's like I always compared it to the movie Finding Nemo, which my kids love, where they say all drains lead to the ocean, kid. So basically, any water in your property, they said we could regulate it. I mean, that's a great example of that overreach the EPA tried to do.
Oh. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I get into the legal intricacies of it, but they claim the EPA and usually Democratic administrations claim, okay, the law says you can control, makes sense, the waters, right, the rivers, the lakes. But then they would say, well, if your land has a temporary puddle in it from rain, well, we can regulate that. Or if your land's adjacent to water, we can regulate that. I mean, what's the point of having state governments if the federal government's going to come around and say we can regulate temporary puddles in your backyard or land that's near water or land that has, of course, then any kind of, you know, endangered toad or salamander comes across or turtles are nearby. In fact, they even claimed even if a turtle might want to come live there, we're going to regulate it.
Even if it may want to come live there, the turtle, we're going to regulate it. That's amazing.
Uh-huh. They said that in the Supreme Court. Can you believe that? even for the Supreme Court, that was going too far.
I'm glad you're joining us today because the Chevron decision, which we've talked a lot about, I imagine that President Trump's administration is going to take great advantage of what the Supreme Court ruled in Chevron. He's talked about being able to, as president now, deal with the bureaucracy. And he put out on Friday his points about handling and dismantling the deep state. You're obviously very familiar with the power of the executive here. What is he up against in terms of dealing with the bureaucracy, the deep state, the swamp, the federal leviathan, et cetera, whatever you want to call it?
It's a great question, Rich. And it may be the most important thing Donald Trump tried to do from his first term and then hopefully will continue in his second term, which is to put this out of control government within the restraints of the Constitution, within the rules that our founders set up. And the basic rule they wanted was everyone should be accountable in some way to the people. And so in the time since then, we've allowed this cancer, you know, this metamorphosis, this meditized body within our government called the administrative state to arise, which controls like, all the things we were just talking about with the EPA. That's just one of many, has hundreds of thousands of employees. Many of them don't believe they can be removed by the president, which is the only way the president can control them. A lot of them don't think they have to take the direction of the president. They actually think they should do what they think is in the public interest, not what the people think in elections. So this has been a big fight. It's been going on. And I think on this one, unlike other issues, on this one, the Supreme Court is really on Donald Trump's side. This Supreme Court for the last 20 years has also been trying to, right, cut back and limit this gigantic government and put it under the rules of the Constitution. And they've been doing so, I think, with great success. And now it really needs, I think, a Republican Congress to start passing laws to fire people, make agencies smaller, maybe even get rid of some agencies. And for a president like Donald Trump to understand the problem and be willing to use the power of the office to tame these bureaucrats.
Professor John Yoo is with me. It's great to have him on the show today, Philadelphia's own. Philly delivered for Trump in a big way. He won 20% of the city. The city's changed a lot in terms of the makeup and the demographics. He won a lot of working class neighborhoods, Port Richmond in the Northeast and South Philadelphia. He did great with Latino voters in Philadelphia. What's amazing is a name that you know, Bob Brady, the former congressman who runs the Democrat Party, said he never even got a phone call from the Kamala Harris campaign. I mean, they really took Philadelphia for granted. And I think the Democrats have done that in a lot of different ways, of just taking various constituency groups for granted. That really showed in the election results, in my opinion.
Well, one thing is, it shows you how incompetent the Harris campaign was. They don't even know how to steal an election anymore. Philly would wait to see the returns from all the other counties when I was a kid, and then all of a sudden their presidential results would come in, and now they reported, I don't know if you're right, they reported early, or they reported first. Like, Brady doesn't even know how to steal elections like he used to. But no, you're right. I mean, Philly, the thing that makes Philly a great city, and I'm still proud to call home, is that it's still a working man and working woman city. And, you know, it has lots of people, different races and religions and all, but it's still, you know, working class. That's why I like that Eye of the Tiger song. That's why the Eagles and the Phillies are the way they are, right? They're a working class town, and it votes that way. So, you know, the reason why I think the Harris campaign overlooked them is because they overlooked working people altogether, and they tried to win, and they did. They won the top fifth, you know, the 10% at the top of the income chain, but they forgot about everybody else. And Donald Trump appealed to the working people in the middle class, and that's still the kind of people that live in Philly. And that, to me, that's the real culture of the city, is this fighting working man's class. And so, of course, they would go for Donald Trump. I mean, I'm not surprised. I think if he were ever to run again, maybe he can't, but if he were, he'd get more than 20% next time.
Now, you say he can't. So is that pretty definitive that he can't do a third term?
Well, the Constitution says two terms, and there are some people who've always said, well, the Constitution really means two consecutive terms. But most people don't think that. It just says two terms. So otherwise, Bill Clinton certainly would have run, although Reagan might have probably run, too. But yeah, I think it's really just two terms altogether.
Let's transition to the legal stuff, obviously, because now he's President-elect Donald Trump. There are still federal cases against him. There are local cases against him. Where does all of this go from here, Professor John Yoo? You're the expert when it comes to this stuff, so I'm so grateful for your time today. Where do we go from here?
Are you kidding? That's just great. I mean, so they got four cases, two brought by special counsel of the Justice Department, Jack Smith, and then one up in New York, and then one up in Georgia. And so the ones we know are dead for sure are the two federal cases, the January 6th case and the classified documents case. And we talked about them, you know, on your show before about why they were so flawed. Well, the president is the head of all law enforcement in the country, all federal law enforcement in the country. The attorney general works for the president, and Jack Smith works for the attorney general. So if I were Jack Smith, I would already be interviewing for other jobs right now, because the first thing Donald Trump not only can but should do is fire him on day one of his administration, which I think he's said he's going to do. I think if Biden had any brains and he wanted to say, oh, this whole lawfare thing was a big mistake, actually boomeranged on us, He should start trying to heal the breach, and he should fire Jack Smith. But I don't think Biden will. I don't think Biden's really in charge of things, top of things right now. So, but that would be the smart thing for him to do. And then Jack Smith should resign right away. They should close up that shop, and they should say the whole thing was a big mistake. But I don't think they're going to do that, because I think they still believe that they, you know, that Donald Trump should be criminally prosecuted in some way.
Yeah, Joe Biden probably thinks it's Jack from the Beanstalk story. He probably has no idea what's happening right now. So that's the problem with that. But no, look, I mean, we got to heal things. It has to end. I don't think Jack Smith wants to give it up. I think he was hell-bent on trying to see Donald Trump go to trial. I don't think he's a special counsel. I'm sure I know we've talked about Judge Eileen Cannon's ruling on this, and I know you agree with that point, too, Professor Yu. But then what do we do about the local cases? Because as you point out, there's four, two on the federal level, two on the local level. So what happens to those?
That's a great point, because the state ones aren't under the control of Washington, D.C. They're under state law. Some of, you know, one of them, you know, the New York case claims to be about things Trump did before he was president, have nothing to do with official duties. Both of those cases are flawed. You know, you saw the Georgia one. They've not even made any progress after, you know, we learned about the DA there hiring her boyfriend to be the special counsel to investigate Trump. And we saw, I mean, I call it the Real Prosecutors of Atlanta show down there, because we saw all these sordid details come out of the prosecutor's office. I think it's better for everyone to drop that case down there. The New York case, that's interesting, because tomorrow we're going to find out if that judge is really going to sentence Donald Trump, right? He's like, there's already been a conviction. I think that case is flawed, and I think Trump should appeal that all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, people didn't really notice that much, but the U.S. Supreme Court, when it said over the summer that former presidents have immunity, they dropped a special footnote that really ripped the heart out of this New York case, because they used testimony of White House officials to put before the jury to convict Donald Trump. And that's the court says you can't do that. So I think ultimately that case will be overturned. But I could see this trial judge still sentencing Trump to jail, letting him appeal, but trying to, you know, trying to knock Trump down a peg or two in public opinion before the case is over, which is what the Supreme Court doesn't want. The Supreme Court doesn't want judges intervening in elections and interfering in politics this way.
Well, and it hasn't worked. I mean, if anything, it's had the opposite effect. It's had a rally around the leader effect. It's turned him into punk rock and the anti-establishment guy, which is obviously you see that from the demographics in terms of the election results. But you're saying that theoretically speaking, tomorrow the judge could sentence Donald Trump to jail and say he has to immediately report? I mean, theoretically?
Yeah, he could. I mean, that would be crazy, but he could do that. He could say, because Donald Trump's not president yet, right? So right now, he's still a private official. And this guy, Judge Merchan, is his name. Remember, this is a case about whether Trump committed bookkeeping shenanigans to, you know, we're now non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels, and whether he tried to do it to conceal it from the electorate in 2016. So he could sentence Trump to a set of years. And yeah, he could say, you know, most of the time, first time nonviolent offender, you would say you can stay out until your appeals are exhausted. But the trial judge has the power to say, no, report to jail right away. And then this guy, this judge, all by himself, will be provoking one of the major conflicts between the federal and state governments in the history of the country. And I hope the federal government would then come in and, using the FBI or the Secret Service as necessary, and say to this judge, that's not going to happen. And any state official who gets in our way, we're going to throw them in jail.
I mean, this is a great plot for a movie. It really is. It's amazing we're talking about this in real life. But what I mean, escape.
Hey, no, I thought of it first. Don't steal my my idea. I'm selling that.
Escape from New York, legal edition. I love it. We'll get Kurt Russell back to play Trump, and you know it's fantastic. I love it. No, but I mean, like we're joking about it, but that's the insane world we're living in. And Mershon is off his rocker. And I mean, you know, like, we live in an age now where you can't predict anything. All rational thinking has gone out the window, so you can't rule anything out. But in this hypothetical scenario, in this movie that we are together writing, and I've just secured the rights to it, by the way, via my agent, who would theoretically be responsible for going to try to get Donald Trump to report to jail? Would that be like the New York State corrections officials, and then they the standoff with the Secret
Court
Service?
Marshals, you know, Rusty the bailiff from the People's Court. I mean, get them all out there. You know, let's see if New York State really thinks it's superior to the federal government. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're going to raise the same arguments Confederates and segregationists raised against the federal government, too. When they that is how extreme it is what happened in this lawfare campaign. Never happened before because people, like you were saying, people used to have good sense. They had common sense, and judges and the law let politics take care of politics. And Trump drove the left so crazy that they resorted to these things that had never happened before. And when they did that, they really undermined the rules and traditions that have governed our country successfully for 220 years, like trying to throw an ex-president in jail, trying to throw a president-elect in jail. And this is the kind of, this is how far they've resorted to because they were so crazy over the idea of Trump becoming president again.
Bull from Night Court. I love it. Well, listen, we got a hit here, my friend, and I know you've written a bunch of books, and they're all, you know, and legal opinions to presidents and whatnot, but this is what's really going to make our mark, all right? So you and Zioli, or Zioli and you, I'll give you top billing. You got it. But either way, we're doing
this. Hey, this is the only time alphabetical order has ever helped me. So it's going to be you and Zioli, and you know, we're going to make a great movie, maybe stream it on Netflix. Maybe we'll get them made in Korea, like they're doing really well. And we're going to have the Cowboys lose a few more games to the Eagles in the background on TV in all the major scenes.
I love it. I love it. You're brilliant. You're great. All right, my friend. It was great catching up with you. Let's do this again sometime very soon. Professor John Yu, thank you so much.
Thank you. Love to be back and call anytime.
All right, we will.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
We got to get AI to write that script ASAP, by the way. I'm sure somebody in the Zioli Army is already doing it, working on it as we speak. I'm sure I'll get a text from Kevin Pulse or an email from Kevin Pulse in 2 seconds that he's bought the domain to it, and he'll sell it to me for $20. All right, listen, we got a lot to get to as the show continues today. 855-839-1210. I want to thank my friend Dr. Mike Venneri on this Veterans Day for hosting a wonderful Veterans Breakfast on Saturday at his office in Cinnaminson. A lot of veterans came out, and they were saluted by Dr. Mike. It was a wonderful thing. You know, the holidays are almost here. If you need a new smile, go see Dr. Mike, all right? And you got to go see a dentist anyway. It's good for your health. It really is. I mean, I don't want to sound like Mama Zioli here, but you got to do it. Plus, with the holidays on the way, there's going to be a lot of pictures. So if you need a complicated dental procedure, dental implants, for example, there's no one better than Dr. Mike Venneri. For over 10 years, he's been recognized as a master of dental implants among his peers, 10 years in a row. So what are you waiting for? He has two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. And you'll love the staff is great. The music that they play in the office is great. And Dr. Mike's a great friend. And yes, he is my family's dentist. We all go to Dr. Mike. My kids go. My wife goes. And I go. 856-786-2020 or VenneriaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VenneriaDental.com. You'll see firsthand why he's so good at what he does, and he is regarded as the master of dental implants. So if you've had a consultation for implants, get a second opinion with Dr. Mike. VenneriaDental.com.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Wednesday night. Me and Fela on stage together. We are going to be hanging out together live in Media PA at the Media Theater. Starts at 7:30 p.m. It's going to be a great show. And tickets are selling really fast, so get your tickets. Don't miss it. Live on stage together, meet and greet, the whole deal. All right? So do it now, 1210 WPHT. Look, a couple things here that I think are essential to note regarding the appointment of Lee Zeldin. This is a guy, and I'm going to read you what Trump said about him just a few moments ago when he made the announcement, all right? And this is really key. He said this. He said, as the 45th and 47th president of the United States, I am pleased to announce that the highly respected former congressman from New York, Lee Zeldin, we appointed to serve as the administrator of the United States Environmental Protective Agency. Lee, with a very strong legal background, has been a true fighter for America First policies. He will ensure fair and swift deregulatory decisions that will be enacted in a way to unleash the power of American businesses, while at the same time maintaining the highest environmental standards, including the cleanest air and water on the planet. He will set new standards on environmental review and maintenance that will allow the United States to grow in a healthy and well-structured way. I've known Lee Zeldin for a long time and have watched him handle brilliantly some extremely difficult and complex situations. I am very proud to have him in the Trump administration, where he will quickly prove to be a great contributor. So there you go. And I know that he was on Fox News a short time ago. We'll try to grab the audio of the exchange after the news was announced. He went on with Martha McCallum a short time ago. And yes, the Kamala Harris campaign is deep in debt. No doubt about that. Very deep in debt. So we'll talk about that as the show goes on today as well. But I'll tell you, it's crazy times we're living in with the blame game that's going on between the Biden people and the Harris people and everybody else. It's funny to watch. It really is. It's funny to watch. Let me play this clip for you. This is Jon Favreau. He's one of the Pod Save America bros, talking about how Biden was going to lose and it was going to be catastrophic, and Biden running again for re-election was a catastrophic mistake. Okay? Cut number one.
Joe Biden's decision to run for president again was a catastrophic mistake. It just was. And he and his inner circle, they refused to believe the polls. They refused to believe he was unpopular. They refused to acknowledge until very late that anyone could be upset about inflation. And they just kept telling us that his presidency was historic and it was the greatest economy ever. We just heard him again say that it's the greatest economy ever. Clearly, 70-80% of voters don't believe that. They don't believe that about their own personal financial situation, but they just keep telling us that. And then after the debate, the Biden people told us that the polls were fine. And Biden was still the strongest candidate. And they were privately telling reporters at the time that Kamala Harris couldn't win. So they were shivving Kamala Harris to reporters while they told everyone else, not a time for an open process, and his vice president can't win, so he's the strongest candidate. Then we find out when the Biden campaign becomes the Harris campaign, that the Biden campaign's own internal polling at the time when they were telling us he was the strongest candidate showed that Donald Trump was going to win 400 electoral votes. That's what their own internal polling said.
So you see the blame game here. But again, all these Democrats were complicit in covering up Biden's cognitive decline, his significant, serious cognitive decline. And so was the media. And these people closed the primary process. There was no way to run against him. Bobby Kennedy tried, and he realized this is a party that is about control, and it was not going to be an open process. And my point is that if they really believed that Biden was going to be a weak candidate, why did they structure the primary process in such a way? And the answer is because at the time, they thought he could win. It was only when it became so glaringly obvious he was going to lose that they set up that debate to get him off the stage. The debate was a setup. That was the con. And then the kill shot by George Clooney with that letter to the New York Times, the op-ed to the New York Times. Clooney, who now says he's done with politics, he's gotten so much blowback and hatred. But all of them controlled every aspect of the process. And that's part of the reason why the grassroots feels like a giant F you to the Democrat Party. You know, Bob Brady coming out and saying that he hasn't heard from anybody. He never heard from anybody in the Harris campaign. He got one invite to go to the Parkway when Oprah was there and charged them $1 million. By the way, Oprah Winfrey charged $1 million for that sit down fugazi interview with Kamala Harris. Just to show you that it was not a real interview and it was a campaign event. Oprah Winfrey, think about this now. Her reputation is toast. I think it's been toast for a long time. Paid her $1 million during her failed White House quest. Oprah Winfrey's company, Harpo Productions, received $1 million from the Harris campaign on October 15th after Winfrey hosted a town hall event for the campaign in September, per the Washington Examiner. Oprah was also featured at Harris's final campaign rally in Philadelphia just days before the election, where she warned voters to get to the polls instead of being tempted to sit this one out. And of course, she also spoke at the Democrat National Convention as well. Harris also spent six figures building a set for the interview she did on Alex Cooper's Call Her Daddy podcast. The set was built in a hotel room in Washington, D.C. and made to look like Cooper's actual set in Los Angeles, according to the Washington Examiner. How about that? All right, we got a big show for you. 4 o'clock hour straight ahead. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.